Good morning. It's time to get up with Sixer Savior. It's the biggest question in the NBA. Can Joel Embiid return tonight to keep Philly's championship hopes alive? Plus, the buck stops here. Have the Celtics found the formula to stop Giannis and the defending world champs? And does anyone want Baker Mayfield anymore? We've got another team making it clear that they are interested in a trade. Is a return to Cleveland actually possible? We're answering that question and a lot more this morning on Get Up. I'm Ryan Smith in for Mike Greenberg. Got a full house here today on a Friday. Look who's here with me in the Seaport. We got Alan Hahn, Monica McNutt, Jeremy Fowler here as well. Louis Riddick coming in to talk football. But we're going to start with an amazing game in baseball. There's Lou, but I got to get to this comeback because it is a doozy. The comeback of the night, Phillies Mets. Let's take it to the top of the ninth. Mets down 7-1. James Norwood in, trying to close it down for the Phillies. Francisco Lindor takes him to deep right center field. Two-run homer off Norwood. Mets still alive. They trail 7-3. Later in the inning, Corey Knable in the pitch. Mets down 7-4. J.D. Davis rips it over the third baseline into left field. RBI double for Davis. Mets now down 2. Dugout fired up. Next batter, Brandon Nimmo, sends this one in the center field. Mark Canna comes around to score. Travis Jankowski's going to come in to score. The Mets tie the game at 7. Two-run RBI single, all smiles for them, and then Starling Marte up at the plate. Can the Phillies shut him down? The answer, no. It's going to go off the wall. Nimmo coming all the way in from first to score. The Mets score 7 runs on 8 hits in the top of the ninth to take the lead. Phillies fans, players, just shocked as the Mets win it 8-7. How rare was this win yesterday for the Mets? They've been around since 1962. Entering yesterday, they were 2-863 when they trailed by 6-plus runs in the ninth inning. At one point, Caesars Sportsbook in the ninth, the Mets were 60-1 to win the game, and our ESPN win probability gave them just an 0.1% chance to win. And yet, they did it, much to the chagrin of Philly fans. And now, speaking of the chagrin of Philly fans, we go to other big news in Philly, where Joel Embiid is currently listed as out for tonight's critical Game 3 against the Heat and the Sixers. But it's possible Embiid, who fractured his right orbital bone, has a concussion. He can still play. Here's Brian Windhorst on that.
He hasn't cleared the concussion protocol yet, so he can't be listed as anything but out. This is more of a issue related to that issue as opposed to the orbital fracture. So if he is able to follow the steps and clear concussion protocol on Friday, and he's okay playing in that mask, I still think there's a decent chance that he's going to get out there for Game 3.
So that's huge news right there, because I think people see the word out and they're like, he's definitely not playing. But there's a chance. So let's live in this world, Alan and Monica, where Joel Embiid actually gets cleared. He actually plays. Alan, what would this mean to the Sixers' chances to win this series?
I mean, certainly it increases because they're a better team when he's on the floor, statistically, defensively, everything. And especially when it comes to rim protection, which they haven't had without him in this series. But does it help them win the series? I didn't think they were going to win this series even with him because they're just not a complete enough team and the disconnect between he and James Harden. But for Joel Embiid to come back. Now, the schedule, I think, screwed them because they played Wednesday, one day travel day, back on the court play again. If they had what the Celtics-Bucks series had, which is 3 days in between games, they don't play till Saturday afternoon, you buy him more time to get out there. They didn't get that opportunity in this, so I do think it does hinder any real impact he could have coming back as soon as he could. But for him to be there, it certainly is something that a superstar, a star, wants to be there for his team, and he will be that.
The best chance the Sixers have of getting this done is for Joel Embiid to be on the floor and be able to contribute. And so I think we're not talking about a guy that is sixth man and plays valuable minutes and is sneakily a contributor. He is the catalyst for all of the success that the Sixers have had this season. And so if he is willing to play and put himself out there, you have to do it. Do I think that they can still get by this Miami squad? I'm not confident in that, but I think he is that much of a game changer if he can actually play and play without hesitation.
So Embiid comes back, how many games do they win?
I think Embiid can get you two.
Two.
Gentlemen's sweep. I think you get the one, the pride one at home. Nothing changes. Him showing up, they're slightly better, but they're not any good unless he and Harden can play as a duo. If they can connect, then you have something. That has not been there. The Heat, are a better version of the Raptors. The Raptors have length, they play defense, they're gritty, and they gave the Sixers trouble despite the fact they went up 3-0. They went up 3-0 because Embiid made an amazing shot.
Yeah,
but otherwise, that was a pretty competitive series. So when you think about that, the Heat are a better version of what the Raptors were, and they struggled and Harden struggled against them. But that's why I just don't feel like, no matter what, they weren't going to win this series.
Okay, and you mentioned Harden. Here's the big thing. Everybody said, look, to stay in this, Harden has to be that superstar guy we saw back in Houston. That is not what we're seeing. So what, Monica, is wrong with James Harden as you see it?
He doesn't have the explosion that he once had.
We don't have enough time.
I mean, simply put, his ability, if we look at his years in Houston in particular, to create separation, to finish through contact, to score off the bounce is not the same. Like, just flat out on a basketball level. And so this is a thing where you realize this guy has been in the league a decade plus. And so if he's not committed to focusing on his body in a new way, I don't know that he's going to get that part of his game back. And because it was so heavily predicated on that, he's not going to be the guy to dribble and snake all into the paint the way Chris Paul has. That wasn't really his game. In particular, if he stays in Philly, that spacing is not necessarily there at all either. So he just doesn't have the quick twitch, the bounce, all of the things that made him elite in terms of his ability to score against defenders.
Yeah, so he's going to have to change, it seems, in a big way.
You can't help the club if you stay in the club. King of Diamonds was really a place that he likes to go to, like the certain road places he likes to be in. You need to be in the health club. And you talked about his body. That's one thing. But what we're seeing is the lack of pop, the lack of finish, two-point percentage. He is shooting under 50%, which throughout his career, normally he's an over 50% shooter from two, but 3 to 10 feet, brutal, under 30%. He's not finishing as much. Is it the length? Yes. Is it the lack of lift when he does get there? I think it's that too. He doesn't have that same burst. And a lot of that, it feels like, is it age or conditioning? It's probably a little bit of both,
right?
That's what it has to be. Well, how about this? When they don't have Joel Embiid and James Harden's on the court for the Sixers, their offensive rating is 109.8. For perspective, Monica, our New York Knicks were 23rd in the league in offensive rating at 109.7. So it just shows you that's not a good number.
Can we put up that playoff stat again? Because I think that's really important. I think one of the discussions around James Harden is you need him to be that guy in Houston. Look at the recent playoff numbers. Mm-hmm. Not that great.
Shot attempts tell you
everything. And shot attempts tell you a lot, but not horrible. So I ask you this question, Monica. What does James Harden need to be if he's not that 30-point guy in Houston with all that bounce and that fast twitch? What does he need to be to lead these Sixers to having a real chance against the Heat?
All right, now the following is predicated on Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris having out of body, because both of them are capable. Max is playing great, and Tobias Harris is capable of filling it up. I still think it wasn't too long ago where we weren't concerned yet about James Harden because of his ability to be a facilitator and the attention that he garners. Now, granted, Joel Embiid's not on the floor, completely changes the dynamic. However, to me, James Harden is now in the category of a three guy, to me, in terms of a big three that you have to respect because he can still knock down a catch and shoot, you know what I'm saying, get those percentages back up, but he still has the ability to facilitate. And as long as defenses are still respecting him, he will be able to find his teammates. Now, if something magical were to happen without Joel Embiid, that means he rattles up 12-plus assists and Maxey's gone for 40 and Harris is going for 35. I don't know that that's happening.
For them to win without Embiid, he's got to give you 30 a game as well. You just described what he was in Brooklyn last year when he became sort of a better version of what he was in Houston, which is a facilitator who could still score. And he had Kyrie and he had KD and he was just, he was magnificent last year with Brooklyn in stretches. He wasn't that certainly this year, but he's also still falling into what he was in Houston, which is full ISO. He's leading the NBA in ISOs per game in the playoffs, almost nine. And that's Luka Doncic just slightly behind him. Here's the difference. He's shooting 32% on those ISOs. Luka's shooting 47% and getting to the foul line on them as well. So there's not, if he's not efficient in the ISOs, and he's really gone full ISOs now, which is not what they need him to be.
I got to say, all of this is killing the Philly fan in me, but we're going to talk more about this, and we're going to talk about whether or not Philly should pay him long-term coming up in just a little bit. But meanwhile, I want to get to the other Eastern Conference semifinal. It resumes tomorrow. Boston, hopefully, doing the impossible at this point. Not hopefully, but actually. Celtics have done a great job containing Giannis as he's missed 15 shots in each game. On any shot outside of 5 feet, Giannis is shooting just 20%, 6 of 30. The two primary culprits who've been making his life difficult, Al Horford, Grant Williams. The two have held him to 32 points on 37 shot attempts. And it's not any easier at the line for Giannis as he's in this series. He's shooting 55%, 11 of 20 in the regular season. He was shooting 72%. from the line. And on shots from 5-plus feet from the basket, he's 12 of 37. So when Al Horford or Grant Williams is the primary defender. So he's having a lot of trouble. And it makes you think, what's actually happening in this series, Monica? You've got some tape on how the Celtics are slowing down Giannis. Show.
Han knows I love tape. Ryan, you're going to learn today how much I love tape. We talked about the Celtics' ability to game plan defensively. Here, Al Horford, you mentioned primary defender, does a decent job of stopping Giannis. But you saw the numbers highlight the help around him. That's Bobby Portis, who is open. Then you got Brooke Lopez, who would be available if Giannis opts for a pump fake and maybe a dump down. Instead, he decides to attack on three guys and gets a bad look. This is a clip just to show you Grant Williams staying glued to Giannis. And this one's short, but there were points in that ballgame where Grant nearly neglects help completely just to stay connected to Giannis, and it worked. Here, Giannis is playing one-on-one, but it's actually one-on-three. This is too slow. The Celtics defense is already set. And then look, Brooks in the corner. You got Bobby at the top of the key. Instead of swinging the ball and maybe cutting and reposting, Giannis opts to go up against three guys. And so when I say Giannis, to me, is at the point in his career where he will watch that tape, he will see the same things, and can click the switch in his mind that allows him to go back to facilitator, which he's done so well. That is the biggest difference between the Bucks and, well, one of the biggest differences between the Bucks and the Nets, that he has a supporting cast that he can rely on.
That's interesting, because you say that he can look at this tape and make the adjustment. That was the criticism against the Nets, mm-hmm. that they were not making the adjustment. Alan, why do you think that Giannis is going to have better luck against these Celtics than KD did against this defense?
Well, he has a coaching staff. The Nets don't.
That is,
you know, that's
so
a big
cold.
Difference here. You have well, it's the truth.
It's cold.
Kevin Durant watches film. He does, and I'm sure the Nets coaching staff and Steve Nash, they all watch film too. But Steve Nash is Jason Garrett. I mean, this is what he does. He's going to be all right. Match on the show. That's what he's good for. That's why he's there. Because Kyrie told you we don't really need coaches. We're coaches. Well, that's what you got. You wanted it. You got it. But Mike Budenholzer and his group, they've won a championship. They make adjustments. They can understand. All right, let's watch. We've had 3 days to watch film on that.
It's true.
Then we can make that adjustment. And, oh, by the way, another reason why that defense for the Celtics was much better in game two is because their offense was much better.
Absolutely.
And when your offense is putting in buckets, you can set up and now keep him from going downhill. Keep him from getting into transition and making those passes that you said he didn't see. When you get him in the half court, he is a different player because, as you saw Grant Williams do, stay strong, don't let him get around you, and force him to take those fadeaway jumpers. That's not his game.
Now, in the second half, though, you did see Giannis begin to find some momentum in transition basketball. Anytime that he had an opportunity to match up with the Celtic, whose feet were not set and ready for him, he had the advantage there. And so, to me, it also helps that the adjustments are relatively simple on the Bucks side, in my opinion. Like, if he kicks that ball to the corner and reposts or dives, like, he's on the move again, even though it's in the half court set.
He talks a lot about trusting his teammates.
Yep.
Got to do that a little
bit
more. So, Alan, real quick, what's the most pivotal factor in this series as you see it moving forward?
The pivotal factor in this series is still going to be him and Jason Tatum, the two battles there. I mean, that's really what it's going to be about. Both teams are great defensive teams. The Bucks are still the best, statistically best defensive team in the playoffs right now. So it's going to come down to this. This is going to be a grind. I mean, this is going to be a long series. It's going to be a grind. If I'm the Miami Heat, I want to, no offense, take care of the Sixers, get them done so I can rest and be ready and let those two teams just battle it out, because one of those teams, whoever comes out of this second round series, is not going to be as strong as whoever comes out, or Miami comes out, of that series with the Sixers.
You know, it feels like in so many ways in the NBA playoffs, it ends up coming down to the superstars. That's what will be happening in this series.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of the superstars, or at least one guy who used to maybe be a superstar, the NFL draft is coming on. Baker Mayfield, they thought he was going to be one in Cleveland, but he's still a Brown right now. Yesterday, Jake Trotter reported that Baker's camp feels like the Browns are, quote, unwilling to negotiate Mayfield's release. And last night, Pete Carroll was asked about trading for a veteran quarterback. Listen to what he had to say about that.
I don't see us, you know, making a trade for anybody at all. I don't see that happening. But we're certainly going to continue to be open to the chances to help our club. And meanwhile, we're just going to be battling and competing our tails off. But that, you know, there's always a possibility. So we keep open to that.
All right, so he's open to it, but by anybody, I'm assuming he means Baker Mayfield. So let's bring in Lewis Riddick and Jeremy Fowler. And Jeremy, let me start with you. What is the latest on the trade market for Baker?
Yeah, Ryan, here's the deal. I just checked in with a source, and I was told the Browns are in no rush here. They're prepared to hold on to him for a little bit longer because mandatory minicamp isn't until mid-June. They got some time. There's a lull in the action here, and teams have not been eager at all to do the Browns any favors here in that $19 million in guaranteed money. They're just sort of sitting on this, waiting. waiting for the Browns to release him, and they haven't wanted to do that yet, haven't conceded. And so they could see, you know, what happens in the quarterback landscape. Maybe there's an injury, there's another opportunity, team gets desperate. They're going to play the long game here, it looks like.
Okay, so from the people you've talked to, from what you see here, you think there's any chance he ever plays another down for Cleveland?
I don't. I was looking at the list here of just all that's happened. It just seems too much to overcome. And I mean, Baker himself has made clear he wants out, doesn't want to play another down in Cleveland. There's some lost trust. The Browns have been trying to replace him for months, if not years. Let's be clear about that. GM Andrew Berry, head coach Kevin Stefanski did not draft Baker Mayfield. And then you have Jacoby Brissett. They brought him in. They're paying him nearly $5 million to potentially play if Deshaun Watson's out. Baker Mayfield's ripped the game plan. There's some lost trust potentially among coaches. I think it's too much to overcome. But, you know, hey, look, he's in a position where he has to come in and the money's going to talk, and also his future is going to talk. If he's disgruntled and difficult, it could be harder to get a job in the future. He's got to think ahead. If they have to play him, maybe he'll concede. But I just don't see it.
And you look at the Browns on the roster right now. You know, here's the thing, though, Lewis. The NFL is a world in which if a team wants to win and they see Baker as the best option, he may get in there. What do you think? Do you think there's a chance he plays for the Browns this season?
Ryan, I think it's possible. It's probably not probable. I mean, look, you see right there, and as Jeremy already laid out, they have made, you know, all of their plans as far as how they have constructed this football team are with the idea that Baker, more than likely, I mean, he's not going to be there. I mean, you don't pay Jacoby Brissett what you're paying him because you think then you're going to have a quarterback on your roster who's making upwards of $19 million. That's just not good planning. That doesn't make any sense. So I don't know. I don't see a situation with him being there, although we all know that unfortunately in the offseason, even in the offseason, things can get sideways for a football team quickly. And what you didn't think was a need all of a sudden turns into a need. And when, you know, if you were to ask the question of how would that look if Baker would return to the locker room, look, I think ultimately, although we on the outside when we're trying to discuss these kind of things as far as locker room dynamics think that once a guy gets in Baker's type of situation, that all of a sudden they would like lock the doors and kick him out of the locker room and team and people would refuse to play with him and, you know, there would be an uproar. Look, the NFL, man, look, players are about trying to win games and inviting whoever will help them win games into the locker room. So, look, I don't think it would be impossible for him to play there again, but I just don't think it's probable.
I think that's a really great point because the idea that we forget this Browns team is still a team that feels like it's a true playoff contender, Lewis. They think they can go far. And if things aren't working out early on, let's say with Jacoby Brissett, if Deshaun Watson isn't playing because of his issues, I wonder if they turn to Baker and try to see what they can figure out here. But if they do something like that, what kind of quarterback, Lewis, do you think Baker is at this point?
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Right, I think the best word to really describe Baker is that he's dependent. He's dependent upon everything else around him really kind of humming at a high level, meaning the running game, the offensive line, pass blocking efficiency, the play action passing game. And look, without the benefit of the play action passing game over the course of his career, look, Hembo shot me this stat before we came on the air, and that's the fact that Baker really is a bottom third quarterback as far as drop back passing as measured by QBR without the benefit of play action passing. What does that tell you? That tells you this: if you can shut down their running game and make him a one dimensional pocket passer and make him a guy who has to beat you from there, from a stationary position, read out the progression, and really execute full field reads and just throw the football with anticipation and accuracy, you got him exactly where you want him. That's not a top third, top quarter type of quarterback. So for him, he needs everything else to be around him, really humming at a high level.
Oh, sounds like he needs a huge support system. And real quick.
Yeah, but to Lewis's point, there would be some support for Baker Mayfield in the locker room. It's not like it's nothing but 53 enemies
right,
in there for
right.
him. He does have some friends, some people who believe in him there. And he's shown for 2 years that he has played at a decent level. I've talked to some execs around the league that are shocked that there's no market.
It is amazing considering what people thought he would be and how far he has dropped since then. We'll see how that plays out. In the meantime, let's turn to the chase for the cup. This was a good one last night. Penguins, Rangers. Game two. Look who's in the building. Anthony Rizzo, Aaron Judge, DJ LeMahieu having a cold one and enjoying it. Under 8 minutes to go in the second, we take you to. Rangers up 2-1. Frank Vatrano winds up, sends it into the goal with the help of Chris Kreider. Watch this closely because Kreider's got the redirect here that puts it in the goal. Kreider, that's his 26th career playoff goal. Rangers push their lead 3-1. 90 seconds to go in the second. Sidney Crosby racing down the ice, hounded by the Rangers. Puck goes to Brian Rust, back to Crosby for the score. His 70th career playoff goal, Penguins within one. 12 minutes to go in the third. Artemi Panarin throws it out front, tries to get in there, gets it in for the goal. But take a closer look. The puck appears to come off the skate of Mike Matheson, and the Rangers go up 4-2. Penguins down 5-2. Empty net. Take a look at Jeff Carter running right into Igor Shesterkin. Hey, watch that closely because they get into it right after. They start brawling over this one. Crosby's even in it. Shesterkin laying out on the ground. And watch it again closely. Carter straight levels him, going right to his body. Shesterkin would stay in the game. Rangers beat the Penguins 5-2 and tie the series up 1-1. Well, coming up, is James Harden playing his way out of Philadelphia? Why the Sixers are two losses away from an enormous decision about their struggling star? And replacing a legend in Pittsburgh, do we already have a quarterback controversy brewing in the Steel City? We're talking about that and a lot more coming up on Get Up. Get Up is brought to you by Miracle-Gro. Meanwhile on planet Earth, this is really great. Tom Brady responded to Justin Bieber's honesty challenge, and he gets something off his chest. Take a listen to this.
Tuck rule game against the Raiders.
Might have been a fumble.
What do you think, Alan? Truth finally coming out?
We knew that. You know what? You want to impress me? You want to be honest? You want to give me some truth? Deflategate.
Oh!
Did you order the code red? Did you tell those guys to deflate those footballs? Then, now that's something that would go viral.
Oh, challenge accepted, Tom Brady. We shall see.
Oh, boy.
Coming up, the Sixers are potentially two losses away from an enormous financial decision about James Harden's future. How much should they pay their struggling star? Plus, foul was clearly excessive, but was the punishment from the NBA excessive too? Why, one of our analysts says yes, and we're talking about it next.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome back, and we go back to Philly, where James Harden appears to be a shell of his former self this postseason. He's averaging only 18 points on 39% shooting against the Heat, raising questions about his future, questions that could be answered this summer when Harden turns 33 years old, which is like 90 in normal people years. The ball's in Harden's court this offseason. He could opt in the final year of his contract for $47 million guaranteed and become a free agent next year at age 33. Or if he opts out, he would be a free agent this year and would possibly be looking at a Supermax contract that could be worth up to $250 million over 5 years. As a Philly fan, my heart just stopped. Now I got to resuscitate myself. Okay, I'm back to the segment. Woo. Jay Will's with us. Jay Will, All right, so advise me, man. Should the 76ers, or what should they do this summer with James Harden?
Well, I think you have to have a realistic expectation conversation with him. And, like, here's my thing. I don't think we're going to see an alternative version of James Harden. I think this is who you're going to have for the rest of his career to a degree. He hasn't attempted 20 shots or more yet. He's going to be a pass-first facilitator kind of guard. I think he's a piece. I don't think he's the piece. I think the piece that you go after this summer is Bradley Beal. I think having Bradley Beal, James Harden, and Joel Embiid on the same team is the way you win a championship. Yeah.
How are you getting him? You don't have any cap space. And, oh, okay, then you're ready to give up now.
Everything.
Yes. Be careful now. Your heart already is
tough. Somebody get a doctor on
Tyrese
standby.
Maxey.
You find a way to get rid of Tobias Harris. You get
Maxey.
Some.
He's got to go. You got to bleed to get something like Bradley Beal. If I'm Washington, I'm not saying, oh, sure, I'll take Tobias Harrison 2 years left at 38 and 39 million. I'm not doing that. It's going to be so hard to get Bradley Beal. You would have to figure out a way to include James Harden in a trade to get a guy like that.
I don't think you have to. I think you can try to get – go ahead.
The Washington Wizards have done that already with John Wall. James Harden, no. Yeah. Please continue.
No, that's what I'm saying from the DMV. So you know
she's right. trying to base the entire franchise around – Beal said he seemed to indicate that he wanted to stay. And they're trying to build around him, so why would they give him to Philly?
You've heard that Bill indicates he wants to stay. I've heard that Bill wants to be with Joel Embiid in Philly.
All right.
Heard about this for a while now. All I'm saying is, I hear how you're trying to get into the technical talk. I am not a GM. I don't know exactly how to get it done.
Okay.
But trust and believe, Daryl Morey would love to have Bradley Beal there along with James Harden and Joel Embiid.
That's an interesting point. At the expense of James Harden, the guy who he moved heaven and earth to try to bring in, do you think something like that could happen?
Can they make a trade like that? If they do, if David Stern will roll over in his grave and then say that trade will not be allowed to happen. I mean, how do you possibly make that work? I don't know how.
Well, it's not just one trade. It could be a multiple team trade. You move assets and you get enough cap space for Philadelphia to go after Bradley Beal.
Jay, I have covered the Knicks for a very long time.
Yes.
This has been the Knicks every offseason. How do you get Dame Leonard? Well, you just move this junk and put it over here.
You guys don't have an MVP caliber player.
James Harden?
No, I'm talking about Joel Embiid.
I'm saying what you have assets to give to get a player. What do you have to give? Washington is trying to reset and rebuild. They actually had a pretty competitive team down the stretch. What do you have other than, again, it starts with Tyrese Maxey. You've got to give me something like that to get me even to pick up the phone. Otherwise, I'm hanging up on you. James Harden, if he opts in, would have the second highest salary in the league next season behind Steph Curry. Listen to the top five next year.
Okay.
You tell me if it's worth paying anybody these days. Steph Curry's number one, 48. Harden would be 47, number two, if he opts in. Wall, Russell Westbrook are the next two. Then your fifth highest paid player, by the way, is LeBron James.
Oh,
I haven't even gotten to Giannis, Kevin Durant. I haven't gotten to anybody good
yet. How are they on the back end? What?
I can't
so
even. Confused.
So why would you give him a five-year $250? Why would you give him a three-year? Why would you give him a 2 year?
I'm glad you asked the question why, because, Monica, I want to talk to you about this. And, again, look at these numbers. The why of it all. You just traded Ben Simmons, all defensive stalwart, the guy who was supposed to be your future, to bring in James Harden.
A guy who didn't want to be there, by the way.
Right, but Daryl Morey, this has been his quest all along to bring James Harden in, right? So if I'm James Harden, Monica, I go to Daryl Morey and I say, I'm opting out. You got to pay me. Or are you going to let me walk and have traded Simmons for nothing? How do you handle that? This is what it's like in Philly right now.
No, here's the deal. If, and this is a huge if, and it is going against past behavior, which is the best indicator of future behavior, if James Harden has a come to Jesus moment, so to speak, and understands that at this point in his career, he's got to do something differently, he can be a third piece there. Mm-hmm. I buy that as a facilitator. He's not going to be able to do that with the standard operating procedures so far in terms of his body, health, diet, lifestyle, the whole bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's a guy that wants to make that shift in terms of adding longevity to the course of his career or not. Now, that to me, that's the question that has to be answered quietly in back doors. I hope you're getting an honest answer.
So here's what it comes down to.
Go ahead.
How much does James Harden want to win a championship?
Mm-hmm.
How much does he want to win? Because if you really want to win and you recognize that maybe you haven't been doing things the right way, if you are that third piece, if they are trying to go after another big-time free agent, like, are you willing to accept less money to be part of a championship team and then not have people use that against your ultimate resume?
I like that you bring up, are you willing to accept less money? Because in the NBA world, no one is willing to accept less money. And James Harden, if I was his agent or working with him, I'd say, why should you accept less money? They had to trade the house to get you.
Here's why.
I think you accept less money
because you're like Philly.
I'm not friends with you.
If you want the money,
this is it.
Take it from Sacramento. Enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good luck.
Where do you want to be? That's why you start looking at money.
Who's giving him that money that he could have that? I think all his leverage out the window. The way the season ended, the way he's played in the playoffs, zero leverage. His only leverage is Daryl Morey, who has to save face for the trade he made. But, Jay, did anyone win this trade? Ben Simmons just had
Real
surgery
quick,
yesterday.
Did anyone even win this trade?
TBD. Give me until next year.
I think they both
TBD. We'll leave it there. We'll talk about this more as we go on the show. But first, I got to talk about this, the chippiness that's going on in that Warriors-Grizzlies series. And look, when it started Sunday when Draymond Green was ejected for that hard foul on Brandon Clark towards the end of the first half. And then in game two, you saw Dylan Brooks receive a flagrant two ejection after he fouled Gary Payton the second hard. And then Payton, you see it right there, right? So Payton had that, now has his elbow injury. He's going to miss a month, while Brooks was suspended for game three. And then 14 seconds later in game two, Green bloodied after taking an elbow to the eye, and on his way to the locker room, flipping off the crowd. Green was fined about 25 grand for that. Steve Kerr says his eye is still swollen. So, Jay Will, I think
pass
it's calm for the basketball.
Pass it. There it is. What
there
a
we
pass.
Go. Imagine if that would have hit my head. No. We need that doctor on
Jay
standby.
First off,
the fact that you would say that, you wouldn't trust my hands to catch the ball.
Teammate, are you right?
I do trust you. Exactly. That's why I didn't flinch.
Can I just say something real quick?
Yes, please.
I truly believe that Dylan Brooks did deserve a suspension for one game.
Oh.
Because he was in transition. And look, you don't swing your head and club. You at least jump off the ground and meet him at the rim for a hard foul. But I also believe we really missed the boat on Draymond Green. Like, Draymond Green deserved a one-game suspension as well. I'm going to show you reverse footage, and I want you to pay attention to something. Show the foul by Draymond Green from the angle that I told you guys to show the foul from. First off, if anybody ever reaches for the ball, hold the ball out, huh? You have the ball. I have great hand-eye coordination, right? Mm-hmm. I can slap down the ball. I see it. At no point, watch the angle, where Draymond Green comes down and slaps him directly in the face.
Yeah.
Not the ball, the face. He goes face first, then he has him the ball afterwards. And then the jersey pull afterwards, okay? And then the hands down on the ground as if, hey, I'm trying to help you. Look, let's be honest about it. Draymond Green being slick, man. You ain't no slick hustler. You ain't going to out-hustle anybody here. Like, I see what time it is. It was a hard foul. You played the game well. The NBA bought into it. You then went back to your hotel room. You did an emergency podcast. You got your narrative out there before anybody else. It's brilliant. It's smart.
Wow.
But let's not act like that wasn't done deliberately. And I feel like that gets a pass more so than Dylan Brooks gets a pass.
That is a fascinating point, especially the aftermath part. Not only what we don't necessarily talk about.
I got you,
the face
but you
part,
didn't really have me.
But,
mm-hmm.
but the
really
aftermath part is interesting because he controlled the narrative. And part of the reason, Monica, people were saying part of the suspension comes from what happened in the aftermath of the Dylan Brooks hit. The fact that he was injured. If he wasn't injured, you wonder if he'd be suspended.
Absolutely. And so, of course, the most similar thing we had happened during the course of regular season was the Grayson Allen, Alex Caruso play. And so I'm going back through that stuff last night. And Woj tweeted out, the league reserves the opportunity to go back and look at footage and decide based on injury. To me, that is very murky. And I think that's unfortunate. I don't think that this was malicious by Dylan Brooks. If you guys remember, that game was going up and down crazy at that point. The pace was rather frenetic. To me, the windup was more exhaustion. It was just a very stupid and dangerous play. I get it. But I'm kind of with Jay in Brandon Clark was what, an inch, a half an inch from maybe cracking a clavicle or something? And then what? And so I think if the message is how we're fouling, then there's got to be a little bit more consistency. And somebody else will say to me, if somebody gets hurt, you're suspended. Fine. That's probably where you are. But I just think it's murky.
Eye for an eye is what they did because they waited for the injury to be announced before they announced the suspension, which is what you expect. But the suspension won't last as long as, of course, Gary Payton II is out. And the Warriors are going to miss him desperately. I mean, they need his defense in this series and potentially if they can move forward. But, I mean, Jay, it's the playoffs. I mean, you know Draymond Green is going to step over the line every now and then and send a message to a young team that kind of feels a certain way about where they are right now.
The issue's not with the message.
And that's what's going on. No. What I mean is that I don't have any doubt that was it not a mistake at all what he did. He knew what he was doing. He's done it for years. So the suspension part, I think, just comes from the injury. And the fact that it probably didn't.
Which I have a problem with if you look at it that way. I mean, if your goal is to try to say we're going to play a certain way, then to take what happens with the injury and the aftermath into account doesn't seem to line up in the same way.
I don't know.
That doesn't change the way people
look at it as it's playoffs.
Because the thing is, if you're going to do it like Draymond, maybe you can get away with it.
What does that mean?
What does playoffs mean?
It's playoffs.
It's a different level.
So yes to the suspension because it's playoffs? No.
The idea that there was an injury, so okay. I mean, now that's an injury. That was a pretty devastating injury. It hurt, so they got to hurt for it. I think that's just how I understand we all want to protect players. I get all that stuff, but there is a certain level of the playoffs that there is that physicality that is part of it, message sending and all that kind of stuff.
I got to get to this promo. We're going to talk about this more. We're going to get into the Warriors side of it. This series, this shows you how great this series is. And by the way, NBA playoffs roll on tonight with a pair of game threes on ESPN, ESPN Deportes and the app, the Heat and Sixers square off at 7 Eastern. Then it's out to Dallas for the Western Conference semis between the Suns and the Mavs. It all starts with NBA countdown at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Coming up, replacing a legend in Pittsburgh. Do we already have a quarterback controversy brewing in the Steel City? Good job, Jeremy Fowler, catching that pass. We're talking about that next. Plus, what Shohei Ohtani did on the mound was awesome. But did you see what he did to the Green Monster? That, a lot more, and Jay Will passes. Coming up next.
Not putting you in a 2-on-2.
Not passing in a 2-on-2.
They're throwing it all over the place.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
Back with you on Get Up, and let's talk football and play a little game called Fact or Fiction, Lewis. Let's start with the Eagles. They're the best team in the NFC East. Fact or fiction?
Yeah, this is a tough one, man, but I'm going to say fiction simply because I'm going to give the nod to Dallas because of Dak Prescott being the quarterback there and him having less to prove than what Jalen Hurts has to prove this year. Look, Philadelphia's roster, no question, has gotten much better this offseason. A lot of it's going to be on QB number one, who you see on your screen right now running these highlights. But I'm going to give the nod to Dallas for now.
Wow, no Philly team can catch a break today. All right, so Jeremy Fowler, Baker Mayfield will be the starter this season, a starter this season.
A starter.
Fact or fiction?
Yeah, I'll go fact. I changed this about 5 minutes ago. I had it as fiction because the trade market is just simply not going well. There's not a natural fit right now for him to walk into a job and be the starter. But every year we see 10 to 15 guys who are backups or third stringers starting games. Who's that guy, right? So you got to think Baker can get a few games somewhere.
Yeah, Lewis, turn into this one. Kenny Pickett will start week one for the Steelers. Fact or fiction?
As much as I'd like to say fact, I'm going to give the nod to Mitchell Trubisky being the veteran and the fact that I think that Mitchell really fits what Matt Canada, the offensive coordinator, wants to get done in Pittsburgh and what Mike Tomlin wants to get done from a philosophical standpoint. Although Kenny will be nipping at his heels, Coach Tomlin has already said this is going to be a battle royal. This will be one of the more fun quarterback situations to watch because it'll be good, healthy competition.
It should be interesting. And Jeremy, it's so interesting. They brought in Trubisky. You thought it was going to be clear that he was going to be the starter. How are you seeing this from the people you've talked to? How is this playing out in Pittsburgh in terms of how this competition will work?
Yeah, well, I'm told they plan to play no favorites, and that Mike Tomlin's words are sincere, because if there's anywhere in the NFL that is truly merit-based about competition, it's the Steelers. Mike Tomlin is known for this famous line among players in the building when it comes to competition: two dogs, one bone. He says it all the time, said it for years. Now you got three dogs, one bone. They got to fight for it. Now, Mitchell Trubisky has $6-plus million on the books this year. He is likely to be the favorite. He'll get his chances, plenty of reps. But I was told that he even knew that Kenny Pickett was a strong possibility going into this. If he was there at number 20, they might take him. He was prepared for this. Everybody knows what's going on. And Mason Rudolph has more experience in the system than anybody else. He'll be in the mix. I wouldn't discount him completely.
Wow, it's interesting. You thought Trubisky would have the job, but now you never know. And so, Lewis, it makes me think, what do you think Mike Tomlin is looking for in a starting quarterback?
Yeah, Ryan, I think he has made it well known the fact that athleticism and off-schedule playmaking is something that, well, from a defensive-minded head coach like he is, gives defenses a lot of problems and keeps coordinators up at night. The kind of plays that you can't really account for when you're diagramming it up during the week as far as putting in a game plan. He wants quarterbacks that can make all that go away and just beat whatever defense you have diagrammed up. Guys with athleticism who can get out on the perimeter and create, whether it be with their legs or throwing the football on the run, is exactly what he has been looking for. Kenny Pickett can do that. He showed that at Pittsburgh. Mitchell Trubisky looked at his best in Chicago when he was on the move. Whether it was running the football in RPO type of structures, or it was throwing the football in design rollouts and play action, that's where he looked at his best. I would expect to see a lot of that this year in 2022. The quarterbacks on the edge, making defenders really defend the entire width of the football field, as well as defending all three levels, short, intermediate, and deep, because that's what's winning in the NFL. That's what Patrick Mahomes does. That's what Josh Allen does. Even Aaron Rodgers can still do it. I know people say, well, Tom Brady doesn't do that. Yeah, I know. But this is what Mike Tomlin wants, and this is what keeps defensive coordinators up at night.
And Tom Brady is Tom Brady. There's the other part of that. Now, when you look at this, Lewis talking about how maybe Trubisky has the edge at this point, but Kenny Pickett might have a chance. It's really interesting in this competition how tight it could be. As you look at this and you look at the commitment they've made to Trubisky, do you think he has the edge?
Going into it, I know the Steelers were very excited by getting Mitch Trubisky, like talking to them in the building, like, look, this guy's a Pro Bowler, winning record as a starter, high pedigree, high athleticism. Like, they were giddy to get him at the number they did, and they felt good about it. And Kenny Pickett was more, if he's there, if he's available, he might not be able to go a different direction, but, like, we take a chance on him because we're high on him. And I do go back to what a scout told me at the Senior Bowl about Kenny Pickett. You can talk about the hand size, or you can knock him for whatever. Does he have high-level athleticism? He said, he's a baller. Like, that's just what he is. He knows how to figure it out and slow the game down in the moment. That's going to help him in a competition like this.
I like that you say that, because that's what everybody wants at the end of the day. Is he a baller? Can he get me wins? That's the key. Thanks, guys. Let's go to this. Let's talk about some baseball, because what a show me night for Shohei Ohtani. It was showtime. Angels against the Red Sox. He was pitching and batting third for the Angels. And watch this. Bottom first, Ohtani on the bump gets Trevor Story striking out, and then Rafael Devers chasing a pitch in the dirt. And then Xander Bogaerts on the check swing. Three strikeouts in the opening inning for Ohtani. Fifth inning, Ohtani against Devers again. Delivers the splitter. Devers doesn't stand a chance. Ohtani fired up as he freezes out Devers and delivers his ninth strikeout of the day. Then we take you to the seventh. Ohtani facing Story again. Gets him swinging. Final strikeout of the evening. 11 Ks through seven shutout innings. Look at the fire he's showing. Eighth inning. Top of the eighth. Bases loaded. No outs. Ohtani at bat. He knocks it off the wall in left field for the RBI single. Andrew Velasquez scores. But that's not the biggest part of this moment. Watch it again. He hits the ball so hard that his own number falls off the scoreboard. Angels went on to set out the Red Sox 8-0. Look at Ohtani looking at that like, boy, look at the things I can do. Seven innings pitched, no earned runs, 11 strikeouts, 2-for-4. with an RBI at the plate. And yesterday wasn't the first time this season he had 10 strikeouts and an RBI at the plate. He also did so against the Astros on April 20th. Entering this season, Ohtani, for as great as he is, never had a game with double-digit strikeouts and an RBI. And overall, this season, the Angels are 2-0 when Ohtani records 10-plus strikeouts and 8-0 when he records an RBI. And take a look at this lineup. We got mayhem for you this weekend. The NHL playoffs continue, and tomorrow afternoon we'll have Game 3 between the Panthers and the Capitals on ESPN. Tomorrow night on ABC, it's Game 3 versus the Warriors and the Grizzlies. Also tomorrow night, UFC 274 highlighted by two title fights on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. And Sunday afternoon on ABC, Formula 1, first ever Miami Grand Prix. Can't wait to see that. But coming up, we're talking Joel Embiid. He's listed as out. But could he play in Game 3? And would that save the Sixers' season? We'll get into it coming up on Get Up.